We're talking 2000s and the end of the Rick Pitino era officially. Plus, Paul Pierce gets stabbed and nearly becomes the third tragic loss in Boston Celtics history. It's the Tuesday Locked On Celtics. Millie, let's go. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. This the truth like 34. This like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. The crowd goes crazy. Most in-depth coverage on the daily. Mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings. Focus like Danny at the deadline. Global with it, got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line. Play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day. Trying to stay in tune with the C's, that's the best way. Melly. John Corrales here of MassLive.com, welcoming you back as we move to a new decade. Now the 2000s. We've gone from the 1950s, the beginnings of the Boston Celtics. At the time, it was the BAA merging into the NBA. We talk about that. Walter Brown, Red Auerbach, his arrival, the team not wanting Bob Cousy, the team's unique draft that got them Tommy Heinsohn and Bill Russell, all that stuff was at the beginning. We've gone through the 60s, we've gone through the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, now we're in the 2000s. This is an era that a lot of you really remember, I think, and where maybe a lot of you became Celtics fans. This episode is brought to you by Built Bar. It is the best tasting protein bar on the market. It tastes just like a candy bar, and it's going to give you all the protein you want and need without the added calories, the added sugar, the added mess of the other protein bars on the market. And you can get $10 off your first order by going to BuiltBar.com and using the promo code LOCKEDON. In this episode, we begin our discussion of the 2000s with the Rick Pitino era coming to an end officially. His famous rant, the Larry Bird is not walking through that door rant, and what that really meant to Celtics fans at the time. And then Paul Pierce, his stabbing, which happened at the end of the Rick Pitino era as well. As Rick Pitino's era comes to an end, he's dealing with what was very nearly the death of another Celtics star. And there were some circumstances there that really saved Paul Pierce's life. This is really a wild start to the decade. And really, the first few years of this were nearly tragic and still quite bad. So we continue our conversation moving into the 2000s.
Welcoming back Chuck McKinney and Mike Dinan of RedsArmy.com to continue our conversation into the 2000s. Gentlemen, are you prepared to dance on the grave of the Rick Pitino era?
Yeah, I was just thinking, why did I volunteer to do this? Like, this 5-year stretch is not going to be fun.
It's not great, but good things happen. Like, very, very important things happen for the future of this franchise in this stretch. So, aside from Rick Pitino leaving.
It starts out bad, Chuck, but, you know, it improves immensely. And I would say also that as much happened off the court as on the court this decade that we'll be talking about.
Yeah.
Yes. So let's just start with a kind of recap. When last we spoke, it was the 1999-2000 season. We didn't really get into it much other than to say it was Rick Pitino's final full year as a Celtic. He went 35-47. But obviously, the most notable thing in this – well, first of all, let me start with this. He kicks me in the nuts by signing Mark Blunt on August 1st of 2000, before we get into the big moment for Rick Pitino. I just want to get this out of the way, that I don't know Mark Blunt personally, but he's my least favorite Celtic of all time. In August of 2000, after a stint, he was drafted in the second round, I forget by whom, but he was – just made a run through all the minor leagues, USBL, CBA. He went to Paris. He was just kind of like a journeyman. And then in August of 2000, he signed by the Boston Celtics. So Rick Pitino, in his infinite wisdom, continues to try to find his center, and right now he's settled on Mark Blunt. So the signature kind of impatience continues with Pitino. He makes a big trade in this offseason as well, a couple weeks after signing Mark Blunt. It's a four-team trade. Danny Fortson goes to Golden State. Dana Barris goes to Dallas. Dallas gets Robert Pack and Hot Rod Williams and cash to Boston. Let's see who else is in this deal. The Celtics get a first-round pick out of this. They later use to select Joe Forte, which we'll get to. And then in October, they trade Calbert Chaney, Robert Pack to the Denver Nuggets for Chris Herron and Brian Stith. These are all things that we've mentioned, but this is like the big run-up to Pitino's final flame-out.
I mean, you just mentioned a whole bunch of players that I completely forgotten passed through. You know, I just blocked it all out. And it's like, oh, yeah, he played here. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's right.
Oh, yeah. just a constant shuffling of bodies and assets. Really no rhyme or reason to most of the deals. It's mind-boggling.
Mind-boggling indeed. So Rick Pitino then starts what will be his final season, where he goes 12-22, resigns after 36 games. It's funny that he resigns after 36 games because that comes after a huge rant. So March 1st, 2000, the Celtics lose in a buzzer beater to Toronto, and Pitino afterwards is asked about keeping his team positive. And he goes off on the rant, which I can't find in full on YouTube for some reason, but that's the Larry Bird is not walking through that door, fans. Kevin McHale is not walking through that door, and Robert Parrish is not walking through that door. And if you expect them to walk through that door, they're going to be gray and old and blah, 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 blah. And the final line is, if you think I'm going to succumb to the negativity, you're wrong. You get the wrong guy leading this team.
Well, he was half right.
Yeah, he was.
He did succumb, but he was the wrong guy.
He was the wrong guy. He also had that famous line in there, the negativity in this town sucks. Like that's the other thing that I remember. I remember the first part. Everybody remembers the up to gray and old, and you remember the negativity in this town sucks, and that's kind of – so I think it's fitting that this is – the lasting legacy. You think of Rick Pitino in Boston, this is probably the first thing you think of.
Yeah. For me, yeah. He just never quite understood. If you're building a young team, right? An exciting team, and you want to build momentum, right? So you kind of rally your fan base around that team. I think, you know, I know Boston fans are smart enough to understand, okay, we're going to, you know, we have a young team. We got to cut them some slack. I like some of these pieces. But while there were a few pieces, there was so much turnover on this roster with deals that didn't make any sense that I think – you know, fans just didn't know what the hell was going on. Like we wanted to celebrate that Paul Pierce was here, that Antoine Walker was here, that we had some younger players, that maybe there was some pieces in place that we could start building, watch exciting basketball. But everything else was such a mess where there was just no rhyme or reason to anything else that of course we would be pissed off. So I don't think he quite understood, you know, he's this ultimate salesman guy, right? He had that, you know, success book and all that bullshit. But it's like he couldn't quite figure out what he was projecting to fans. It's like, hello, Rick, we're not that stupid. What the hell are you doing? This roster is a disaster. So he wasn't smart enough to understand that we would reject that. that we would be pissed off about that. So that rant is just you know, and I don't know where I just don't. I lost so much respect for him there. Not that I had much over the, you know, left over the last couple of years, but for him to kind of spin it around on us after the shit sandwich after shit sandwich that he kept serving us just really pissed me off. But I'm over it now. Can you tell him?
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
What are you looking for when you get a protein bar? You want something that tastes good and is healthy, right? So you want Built Bar. Built Bar, first of all, tastes like a candy bar. They got a bunch of amazing flavors, covered in 100% chocolate. It's soft, it's easy to chew, it's delicious. Secondly, it's healthy. It's good for you. The health conscious guy out there trying to maybe lose weight or add some muscle, you can use this to supplement your diet because these Built Bars are low in calories, high in protein, and they don't have all the extra junk that you're going to find in some of the other protein bars on the market. You're going to get in these Built Bars delicious. Like I got the coconut chocolate cream one, just amazing. And it's 110 calories, 15 grams of protein, 4 grams of sugar. That's it. There are a lot of other great flavors. Some of them have nuts. Some of them don't. If you have a nut allergy, you can safely choose plenty of great flavors on the Built Bar website, builtbar.com, and have something that caters to you even with your nut allergy. Gluten-free? No problem. They're gluten-free as well. So you can eat these and feel good. So compare them. I'm asking you to go ahead and grab yourself a Clif Bar or one of these other ones. Just grab it and look at the label and compare it to a Built Bar. You're going to find out that Built Bar is going to give you the protein without the added calories, without the added sugars, without the added carbs, and it's going to give you a much better taste. So if you want to eat it for breakfast, if you want to take it and put it in your pocket and eat it after a workout, it's perfect. Go to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get $10 off your first order. BuiltBar.com, and use the promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get $10 off your first order.
You know, Chuck, on top of that, who set the expectations? It was Pitino himself. He came in and said, we're going to get this done, and talked a good game. Success is the choice, and we're going to choose to be successful. Well, why aren't you then? Because by this time in his tenure, it was his third season, and clearly they were going to miss the playoffs again. I mean, the best thing you can say about Pitino's time in Boston is he never lost a playoff game because he didn't get in to coach any playoff games. You know, I happened to be at that game on March 1st, that Vince Carter at the buzzer three. Excuse me, I never forgot that, obviously. And I just watched that highlight on YouTube not too long ago, and he made a fantastic shot. Eric Williams was right in his face. If it doesn't go in, the Celtics win, and it did go in. And I don't know if it was the way that they lost or just the fact that at that point, Celtics were 23-34 after that loss. Clearly weren't going to make the playoffs again. Maybe that's why Pitino snapped. But yeah, he should have been looking in the mirror, not pointing the fingers at us.
Well, I mean, I'm sure that that was part of the frustration of it all, that he at that point knows, like, I can't take this anymore. Like, he doesn't just quit out of nowhere. He knows at that point where he says the line, you've got the wrong guy leading this team. You think I'm going to succumb to the negativity. You're wrong. Ever the salesman, Rick Pitino is sitting here trying desperately. Like, this is his last stand. Like, this is his last chance to say, you know, maybe we can turn this around. Maybe if I go full bore and make sure, like, I'm gonna go behind, I'm gonna stand behind these guys. I'm gonna throw this thing out there, and I'm gonna try to sell everybody on this future, the future of this franchise. And it clearly it doesn't work. And he ends up out. He quit in. What was it? Was January of 2001, right? He quit.
Yeah.
He
couldn't even exit properly. You know what I mean? Just, you know, to come in and only coach a mid season and then bail. Like, he couldn't even do that right. He had to, it just was such a cowardly way to go out. You know, it just, like, he must have known in that summer that he was halfway out. And, you know, for whatever reason, he stuck around and then just, you know, I don't know. I just can't, other than calling him a coward, I don't know what else, you know, what else to call him. I mean, because it was his decision. Right. I mean, this was not a sort of Gaston fired him. Right.
No, he quit.
Quit.
He quit. OK, so we've exhausted, I think, the Rick Pitino stuff. I'll be honest with you. at this point, there's what else is there to say about Pitino? He was never able to push any of the right buttons. He was never able to get the right people in the right place. He never had the wherewithal to stay with a plan. He almost never had a plan. You know what I mean? Like we're talking about him signing guys and then trading them within the same season, drafting a guy and then trading him right away. And he's not the only one in Celtics history that's done that. But he has shown that the plan was always to do the Rick Pitino way. It was never to learn the NBA way and do it that way. The last piece of the Rick Pitino puzzle goes along, I think, with a near tragedy. The Celtics almost had another death with the stabbing of Paul Pierce. Now, Paul Pierce was stabbed in September of 2000. So Rick Pitino's still the coach at this point. And he gets the call that Paul Pierce is stabbed. He's at the Tufts Medical Center, and I thought he was going to die. Now, me personally, I was working at Channel 7 in Boston. I'm working overnights. So I'm on the clock. I'm sitting there and I hear, Chuck, you know how it is overnights. There's three people in the newsroom. We're sitting there like, and you were probably working at Channel 4 at the time.
I was. I have the same story that you have.
Yeah. All of a sudden, yeah. The scanner's going off, and the one person on the assignment desk, you start hearing like, oh my, Paul Pierce? He what? And rumors start flying. You try to figure out like what's going on at that club, whatever. But so September 2000, Pierce at the Buzz Club in Boston, which is right around the corner from Emerson College, not where you went to school, Chuck. Not at that point. that's at my senior year. That was my dorm, like around the corner from there. Well after you had left. So Pierce is caught up in a fight. He says that he, you know, was trying to break up a fight and ends up getting a bottle broken up over his head. He's stabbed. Two things save his life: a big leather jacket that he's wearing, and the fact that Tony Battea is there and able to drive him in his own car to the Tufts Medical Center, which is really, if you know that area, almost literally across the street. Like, get in the car, do a U-turn, get to the emergency room. It's literally like probably 3 minutes away. So those two things end up saving Pierce's life. If they were in, I don't know, someplace like the alley, or even someplace further, like Kenmore Square, you don't know if he would have made it in time. So this is just one of the almost third tragic instances in Celtics history. They almost lost another future star. Follow us on our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Locked On Celtics on Instagram.
You know what they say is that bad things happen in threes. And boy, this was proof of that. But I remember hearing about it when I got into work the next morning. Somebody came up to me. Hey, did you hear that Paul Pierce got stabbed? What? You know, it's the same thing back then. It was not 24/7 being in touch with the world, and things could get by you. But I couldn't believe it. Just like you were saying there, how can this be again? But thankfully, it had a happy ending. And when Pierce came back, I remember seeing his first game back. I'm pretty sure it was preseason. He was driving to the basket repeatedly, and I remember that he made a point of taking a charge right in the chest, and he got up and flexed, you know, and acted like, you're not going to bring me down. I'm back. I'm going to still be here. And he was ready, and he played every game that season, averaged 25 points.
You know, it's just a wild sort of sequence there when you think about how you feel when you initially hear the news, you know, nightclub stabbing, Pierce is involved with some mean dudes there. You know, initially you worry for his life, right? Cause as details are coming out, you know, maybe it's that first sort of, you know, 12 to 24 hours. Where it's like, holy shit, what's going to happen here? And then even once you hear like, okay, doctors think he's going to be, you know, he's going to make it. And then, you know, we're all basketball fans, so we're like, that's wonderful. But then our mind advances to the next stage, and it's like, can he play basketball again? How is this going to impact him on the court? How long is he going to be gone for? And then, you know, I just remember there's some pictures, there's some video of him coming out of the hospital, and he progressed, his situation progressed what seemed to me so quickly, that suddenly he just, then they just began talk that he was going to play basketball. And it just was such a whirlwind when, like you said, you know, we initially were thinking, my God, this has happened again, to holy crap, he survived and he's going to play. And then, like, you know, Mike said, he had a very good season. But there was part of me too that looked at this and thought, oh, you know, what kind of player do we have here with Paul? Because as the details come out, it's just, you know, I know he's a young kid and he's out drinking with his friends, but when you hear stories like that, you just wonder who he's getting mixed up in, what type of crowd he's hanging with. And Paul was pretty, he talked about it more, I think, as it went on, but if I remember correctly, he wasn't out there revealing much to the police. I mean, they had the trial and stuff, but I don't recall. I think my takeaway was Pierce was pretty tight-lipped. He wasn't out there, and I hate to use this term, you know, snitching, but from what I remember, he was pretty tight-lipped, and I don't think the guys involved were convicted on serious crimes. Again, my memory could be failing me, but I just, you know, there was that component to it too. And it just made me think, you know, what kind of guy, you know, just had me questioning his character for a short period of time. And clearly that, you know, he proved me wrong, but there were just so many different layers to this, to this story that it just was, it was just a crazy time.
You know, you had, back in 85 it was, right? Larry Bird got in a fight in a bar, hurt his hand. We talked about that during our 80s discussion. And he denied that he had hurt his hand, but it came out that he did. I don't know. The difference is 15 years later, Pierce gets stabbed. Instead of it's a fist fight, it's a knifing. Or, you know, was it just that circumstance? It happened to be the time of, you know, where the setting was, what kind of club, or just the fact that it was years after. I mean, Bird could have had the same type of thing happen to him. We don't know.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, I don't want to indict Paul, because it clearly was just, you know, a case of he was talking to some females who were connected or somehow connected to some shady guys. So you can find shady guys at any sort of club. I'm not trying to, you know, come down on him for that, you know, knowing everything now, but, it just had me thinking like, oh, you know, I just, you know, I think we had seen what Paul could be, and I just didn't want him to, you know, I didn't want any black marks on his record, you know? So that's, you know, kind of what I was getting at there. Just, I mean, he was a tough kid, right? He grows up in Inglewood. He was a tough kid. He proved it. I mean, he gets stabbed 11 times. You can still see his scars when he was playing in the back of his neck or his upper back and parts of his shoulders. Stabbed 11 times, champagne bottle over the head. That's just wild. I mean, that is wild stuff.
Yeah, you just don't know because there were so many reports. I remember a lot of different reports that was it gang related?
Mm-hmm.
Was it? You know, what was it? Was it a pissed off boyfriend? It was Pierce. What was Pierce do? Like, there are all of these reports and check. Like I said before, like we're in the news business at that point. Like that's, we hear through sources and stuff that people are like, well, you know, they're looking, police are looking into this potential gang member. Was it gang related? What was this? There was a rap group involved that, I don't know what their involvement was. I do remember that Pierce didn't have like a lot to say when it came to like he couldn't. I don't know if he could even point out who it was. He did tell the story that he was at a Morton's restaurant soon after the stabbing. So he's recovering. He's out eating. And then someone calls the restaurant to say, I'm going to kill you. He gets a death threat while eating at dinner. So Pierce now has this feeling like maybe he was targeted at that thing. Maybe it wasn't just an accident. And now he's developed like a paranoia, an anxiety, depression. He talks about that after the fact. We didn't know this at the time, but he said part of the reason why I got back to the court so quickly was that was like his safe zone. He felt good being on the court. He didn't want to be home. He didn't want to be out. He kind of channeled it through basketball. And like you said, he played 82 games the next two seasons and became an all-star the season after. But in that moment, he's dealing with like a lot of depression and anxiety related to the attack, which is understandable.
Yeah, I mean, that's wild. I hadn't even heard that part of the, heard that, those details from him. But yeah, I mean, you look, and off the court, the rest of his career, I don't think there was another blip. There was not a peep out of him. He really became, you know, the model citizen. He was a true Celtic. Obviously, he had a few ups and downs, on the court that were not so, you know, not his finest moments, but I think from this point forward, he clearly he gained a lot of respect, for fans, for what he went through, how he came back, how he performed at such a high level coming back. So, yeah, I think we all had much more respect and admiration for him after that. You know, I still think about it and look back and, You marvel at how he, and I'm sure he thinks that, you know, with 11 stab wounds, you got to think if one was, you know, obviously the leather jacket is the freak thing that you talked about, and also having Tony take him to the hospital, which was so close by. But another one of those, you know, wounds is an inch or two here or there. And you know, then we do have that third tragedy. So just imagine having that in your memory. Jesus.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
He made the leap that year too on the court. As we said, he averaged 25 and he was an all-star, or he became an all-star soon after that. But, he was in his third year then, and he had averaged 16.5 as a rookie, 19.5 in his second year, and 25.3 in his third year, coming back from the stabbing. So he made the leap.
Yes, that was
and
a big,
didn't look back.
That was a big leap. Now, the stories that I'm talking about, he opened up to Jackie McMullen, where she wrote a piece about mental health in the NBA. Prior to the 2000 season opener, the Celtics, in the story, she says, they ran a promotion where players were at the entrances. So fans are coming in. It's the beginning of the 2000 season, and players are at the entrances welcoming fans. And Pierce did it and couldn't be around crowds, couldn't be surrounded by people. And within 2 minutes, he had a full-blown panic attack, and he had to leave. And so this is all just to show that he not only survived the stabbing, he, at that point, has this very debilitating reaction to everything, and he still goes out and performs like he did on the court. Partly because he was a third-year player, a 23-year-old kid who was ready to make that leap anyway. Partly because he was, because as a result of this thing, the court, the basketball court, was his only sanctuary, and he dove into that full bore. Thankfully, Paul Pierce obviously not only survived, but was open about his depression caused by this attack, and really kind of helped shed some light on the deeper mental wounds of that day. We very nearly could have been talking about Len Bias, Reggie Lewis, and Paul Pierce. It was that close. It really was that close. And as I said in the podcast, the proximity to the hospital was extraordinarily important. It's the difference between Paul Pierce possibly making it and not making it. That's how close it was. And the post-traumatic stress, the depression, all of those mental things that Pierce felt after that, he didn't really talk about until much, much later in his life. And he shared things that he says he wished he'd shared earlier. But luckily for Paul, thankfully for Paul, and luckily for Boston Celtics and Celtics fans, that he not only pulled through, as you know, and as we've talked about, he is now, at this point in the podcast, becoming a future star. But as we get into future podcasts, we know that that road was not an easy one for Paul Pierce. So as we continue, we're going to talk about some downtimes for Paul Pierce. We're going to get into the greatest comeback in playoff history to that point anyway, and Paul Pierce, a strong disappointment in international play, and what that meant for him and his perception. So there's a lot more coming on with the beginnings of Paul Pierce's career. Eventually, Danny Ainge gets involved. Doc Rivers comes along. We're progressing towards the championship. That's coming in this decade. So subscribe if you haven't subscribed. We're going to continue talking about all of this up until this current season, up until the 2020 season. So we're going to really dive deep into all of Celtics history. It's going to continue. So make sure you're subscribed, follow on Spotify if you haven't done that already. All of you who have, if you haven't given that 5-star rating and a good written review, it's the only payment I ask for. We're not asking for money, but I am asking for that good written review and that 5-star rating because it really helps.
The Locked On Celtics podcast is the number one Boston Celtics podcast around. That's because of your ratings and reviews. I'd like to keep it that way, so please continue to do that. Also, please go to BuiltBar.com and get yourself a box of the best tasting protein bar on the market. You can get $10 off that first order by using the promo code LOCKEDON. LOCKEDON is the promo code at BuiltBar.com for $10 off your first purchase of the best tasting protein bar on the market. Now, tell your smart device to play the latest episode of Rejecting the Screen.